As the UK commits more funding to Ukraine, London's so-called dirty money problem is again grabbing headlines. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. It's the final day of the NATO summit in Madrid, where leaders have endorsed plans to strengthen the Defense Alliance's forces in Eastern Europe in response to Russia's war in Ukraine. The UK has committed another $1.2 billion in military aid to help Ukraine fight the invasion. But as Prime Minister Boris Johnson looks to deepen his country's support to Ukraine, a new parliamentary report has accused his government of being complacent in enforcing financial sanctions against Russia. The chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee alleges morally bankrupt billionaires are continuing to use the UK as a safe deposit box. The BBC's Gordon Carrera has more.
It is shameful that it has taken a war to galvanise the government into action on dirty money flowing into the UK, the Foreign Affairs Committee says. Its report, entitled The Cost of Complacency, says that for all the rhetoric about clamping down and sanctioning Russian oligarchs, not enough action has so far been taken. In particular, the committee says there is a mismatch between the measures announced and the resources available to law enforcement to go after their targets. A substantial increase in funding for the National Crime Agency and Serious Fraud Office is needed, it says, or the risk is that they will be toothless.
That's the BBC's Gordon Carrera reporting there. Checking the numbers now, global stock markets are on track for their worst first half of the year since records began. European benchmarks are down this hour in the 1.6 to 2.3% range. Stocks in Asia ended with slightly less substantial declines. It comes after the Fed, ECB, and Bank of England chiefs at a conference this week in Spain renewed their commitments to fight red-hot global inflation, no matter the consequences. To the Philippines now, where a new president has just been sworn in this morning.
Kasihanawa ako ng Diyos.
Kasihanawan ako ng Diyos.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
At a ceremony full of pomp, Ferdinand Marcos Jr. said his inauguration marked a historic moment. Indeed, it's a stunning comeback for his family's political dynasty, which was ousted after a popular revolt more than 30 years ago. Mr. Marcos won a landslide election victory last month, despite previous tax evasion convictions. From the capital, Manila, the BBC's Howard Johnson explains that with about a quarter of the population living below the poverty line, Mr. Marcos' supporters are looking past corruption and hoping for economic progress.
He has been selling this idea of a golden age of economics for this country. He said that that's what his father brought about. But a close study of the financial record of Ferdinand Marcos, the late dictator, his father, who ruled the country for more than two decades, much of it under martial law. If you look around 1986 when he was ousted from power, the country was on the brink economically and heavily indebted to foreign banks. So there is always this myth-making with the Marcos family in which they promote this idea that they're excellent economically, but some of the details aren't always there.
In his inauguration speech, he said he doesn't want to focus on the past, but look more toward the future. So what are his plans?
Well, I think what's telling is that Bongbong Marcos has appointed himself as agriculture secretary. And that's really a throwback to what his father was most famous for in the 1960s and 70s with the help of the American imperial influence on the country. There was the Green Revolution, the famous bioengineering of rice to create greater yields. And I think that was something that Ferdinand Marcos benefited from. So Ferdinand Marcos Jr. has been talking about improving agriculture in the country without any real technology or science to suggest how he will do that. But if you do look at even the recent past, we're seeing that debt in the country has been increasing. President Rodrigo Duterte did spend a lot during the pandemic, and that is also putting pressure on this government when it comes to spending. Can they really make these big promises about making lives better for people when there is an increasing need to raise taxes to pay off that debt? And on top of that, the local currency has fallen against the US dollar, so people's lives will be impacted when it comes to the amount of goods that they can buy with the peso.
The BBC's Howard Johnson for us in Manila. Thanks for breaking this down for us.
Great chatting with you.
Much like in America, owning a home in Australia is the dream. But new census data show there are still big hurdles preventing many from reaching that goal. From Sydney, the BBC's Phil Mercer explains why.
Since the start of the pandemic, house prices here in Australia have increased on average by 26%. For many first-time buyers, they've simply been unable to compete with investors and existing property owners. Now, Tim Lawless is the head of Asia Pacific research at CoreLogic. This is a data analytics consultancy.
We saw first-home buyers peaking in early 2021 at nearly a third of owner-occupied demand. But since that time, we've been seeing first-home buyer activities trended lower to be about 25% of demand, and chances are it will continue to trend lower.
Now, Phil, experts in Australia there say the housing market is actually in the early stages of a downturn. Will that help people looking to get on the housing ladder?
Well, those days of ultra-low interest rates in Australia are over. The cost of borrowing money to buy property has been increasing since rate hikes were brought in by the Reserve Bank. And of course, that increases the cost of paying those loans back. Also, inflation is at a 20-year high, so prospective buyers also face other cost of living pressures.
The BBC's Phil Mercer for us in Sydney. Thanks for breaking this down.
Thanks, Victoria.
And one final piece of news for you. Russia says this morning it's withdrawing from Snake Island in the Black Sea. Moscow said the move demonstrates it's not hindering UN efforts to transport Ukrainian farm products. It also says a ship carrying 7,000 tons of grain left a southeastern Ukrainian port bound for, quote, friendly countries. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.